Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kamma Daf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins more than halfway down daf mem ches. If you prefer, you can count 20 lines up from the bottom. We have a quote from the Mishnah, Hichnis Shoro Lechotzer Baal Habayis. The diamond that you see was referred to at the end of our previous shiur. We have rulings of Rava concerning matters of Nezikin, matters of damage as a result of entering someone else's domain, or I should say in the course of entering someone else's domain. The Gemara. Omar Rava, Hichnis Shoro Lechotzer Baal Habayis Shelo Birshus. A person brought his ox into his friend's courtyard without permission. V'chofar bo Birshichun Moros. And the animal dug different kinds of pits. In other words, the animal ruined the surface of the neighbor's courtyard. Baal Hashor Chayav Benizge Chotzer. The owner of the animal has to compensate for the depreciation in value of the Chotzer that's now been ruined by this animal. There's another factor or an additional issue that comes up. A pit has been created in someone else's domain. Who bears responsibility for damage that happens as a result of falling into the pit? Ubal hachotzer chayov benizke habor. The owner of the courtyard, he becomes responsible for whatever happens with that new pit. Rashi adds, we're looking at Rashi about halfway down. Ubal chotzer chayov benizke habor im hifki rushusa. Rashi adds information that's of incredible importance. We're talking about a case where the courtyard in which this bore was now dug, the courtyard's ownership was renounced, so that it now that pit becomes, we'll say, accessible to the public. If we were dealing with a totally private courtyard with someone that has a pit in there, it's similar to, someone has a swimming pool in their backyard, and someone falls into that swimming pool. Totally private area. The owner of the courtyard is not responsible for someone's falling into such a pool. However, here we're talking about a case where the initial digging was in a totally private area. However, the surrounding area, that area surrounding the pit, its ownership was renounced by the owner. Rashi goes on with additional information. The af al gav dechsiv ki yichre ish bor. Even though the Torah says, and when a man digs a pit, and we darshan, we explain from that pasuk, we learn velo ki yichre shor bor. The Torah excludes the case of an animal digging a pit. In other words, a pit that creates culpability is when a man dug the pit, not when an animal digs a pit. Hani mili, so Rashi explains that drosha, that teaching, is applicable to bor b'shus harabim. That's a pit that's initially dug in a public thoroughfare. The lavale didei ramya limlui, the pit that one's animal dug in a public thoroughfare, is not something that it's expected that the owner of the animal fill up the pit. The public thoroughfare is not his own domain. Let's continue now in the Gemara. The Gemara will point out what Rashi just said. We just pointed out that the Bala Chotzer, the owner of the courtyard, is chayev, will bear responsibility for any damage that happens in that pit after he renounced ownership of the surrounding area. Af al gav, the Omar Mor, even though it has been taught, ki yichre ishbor velo sharbor, the Torah portion that deals with pit culpability is referring to a case where a man digs a pit and not where the animal digs a pit. Hacha, in our case though, kevo di isle lehech limluyoy velo komalye, since the Bal HaChotzer, in whose domain this pit was dug, had the responsibility of filling up the pit before he renounced ownership of the surrounding area, and he didn't do so, keman dekarya domi, it's as if he dug the pit. The pasuk that exempts is a reference to an animal digging a pit in a public thoroughfare. And that is not something that we hold the owner responsible for filling up. The Omar Rava, Hichnishor lechotzer bal abayis shelo birshus, a man brought his animal into the neighbor's courtyard without permission. Vehizik es bal abayis o bal abayis huzak bo chayav. If the uninvited animal damages the owner of the courtyard, or the owner of the courtyard experienced damage by tripping over the animal. So the owner of the animal, the uninvited animal, has to pay for the damages. Rovatz Potter. Now here we just translate, and it won't make any legal sense, and the Gemara will ask about this. But the translation is, and Rashi points out, the thinking is that right now Rovatz means the animal lay down upon vessels and broke them, or after the animal lay down, the owner tripped over the animal. Rovatz means to crouch down, to lay down. So that Rovatz, if the uninvited animal in lying down created damage, there's exemption. The Gemara asks, why should that be? Umishum de Rovatz Potter? Because the animal crushed vessels under its body while lying down, that exempts the owner of the animal? Omar Rav Papa, my Rovatz, the Rovatz that Rava mentioned as being exempt, Shehirbitz Glolim, V'netanfu Kalov Shel Bal Habayis. The animal cast forth waste, dung, its glolim, its feces, and afterwards, after the feces were lying in the courtyard, the clothing of the owner got ruined or soiled upon the glolim. Now, the legal analysis is as follows. The havya glolim bor. The glolim have the status of bor. Bor, we've learned earlier in the Masechta, isn't limited to a pit alone. It's an item over which someone will experience, let's say, damage. It's an inanimate, passive item that can be the cause of damage. So the Glolim have the legal status of a bor. V'lo motzinu bor shechayev bo es hakelim. We don't find that the creator of a boar is culpable for the damage done through the boar to vessels. The boar, if, let us say, an animal falls into a pit, so the owner of the pit must compensate for the damage or death of the animal in the pit. The pasuk speaks about kipol shoma shor o chamor, and we darshin shor velo adam chamor velo kelim. A boar is not responsible or does not create culpability for the ruination of kelim, of vessels, of items. The Gemara says, Ha nicho l'shmuel, this analysis and this explanation fits in with Shmuel, diyomar kol takola borhu. Shmuel says that all sources of stumbling are classified as a boar. So the globum are a boar. Hello l'rav, diyomar ad mifkale, ma'ikol ameimar, according to Rav, that an item is not classified as a boar unless the ownership of that item was renounced. And here, the ownership of the golem is not renounced, at least at this point. So, why would Rava state exemption? The Gemara answers, Amri, stam golem afkuri mafkir luhu. The answer is exactly that your standard case of golem is one in which the owner automatically renounces ownership of it. So that the golem, even according to Rav's thinking, have the status of a boar. V'omar Rava, nichnas l'chotzer bal habayis shelo birshus. A person entered someone's domain without permission. V'hizik es bal habayis, and he caused damage to the owner. O balabayas huzak bo chayav, or the balabayas stumbled over the intruder, and the balabayas suffered damage. Chayav, the intruder must compensate. He ziko bal habayas poter. If the balabayas was mazik the intruder, so the balabayas is exempt. Omar Rav Popa, lo amoron, the statement that the balabayas is exempt is qualified. Elo delohava yodabe, the owner, the balabayas, was unaware of the presence of the intruder. Avol hava yodabe, if the owner was aware of the presence of the intruder, hiziko balabayas chayav, if the balabayas causes this uninvited guest damage, so he must pay. My taimo, why? Mishum di omar le, the intruder can say nehi di islach rishuso lafuki. Granted, you have permission to cast me out of your domain, lazuki less loch reshusa, but to impose damage upon me, that you don't have permission to do. The ozdu l'tamayu. The statements in this discussion of Rava and Rav Papa reflect their teachings, their rulings elsewhere. The Omar Rava Vitema Rav Papa. Rava, and some versions have Rav Papa as saying the following. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Shnehem Birshus. Rashi says at the top, Shnei Birshus, Kigon Birshus Arabim, Ochotzer Ashutfin, Oshanosan Lo Balabayas, Rishus Likones. You have two people that are found in a public domain or in a courtyard that's jointly owned, or a situation where the balabayas gave permission to enter. Oh, the Gemara continues, Oh shneim shelo birshus, or the two of them have no permission. And Rashi gives us an example, two people running in a public domain. So we have categories here where the two parties are on equal footing. Either they both have a right to be where they are, or they both don't have a right to be doing what they're doing.
Heziku ze eze chayovin. If they damaged one another, so they have to compensate. Heziku indicates a proactive effort in damaging the other party. Huzku ze boze pturin. If one experienced damage as a result of colliding with the other individual, stumbling over the other individual, there is exemption. Taimo, the reason for the ruling that we just saw is Dishneim Bershus or Shneim Shelo Bershus. They're both with permission or both lacking permission. Avol Echod Bershus ve Echod Shelo Bershus. If one had a right to be there and the other one not, Dir Bershus Potter, Shelo Bershus Chayav. The party that had permission, and he is the, we'll say, the cause of the damage, he's exempt. The one that had no right to be there, and damage resulted, he must pay. The Rashi in the narrow lines says the upper part of the narrow lines, third narrow line, Dibershus Potter. Bein hezek de biyodayim, whether it's a proactive form of imposing damage, bein hezek de memela, or in a passive fashion, he was responsible for damage, but he is the one that had a right to be there. Ubedelo yodale. Rashi adds very importantly, so as to confirm what Rav Papa said earlier, where the person that had permission to be there was unaware of the presence of the other one. So you can imagine someone was, let's say, swinging his arms in all directions and ended up punching someone that was slightly to his back. And he didn't realize he was there, the fellow swinging the arm. So he's not responsible, assuming that he had a right to be where he was, and the other fellow was there without permission. What we see in this last point of Rava, you see that where there's a situation of Shelo Birshus, there he bears culpability to compensate for damages. And you notice we have a little arrow to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. Four lines up from the bottom of Omid Aleph, we also have an arrow. And on that line, you could see Shelo Birshus has been dashed, underlined, and that is the ruling that follows that. You can see on the next line, Chayav, which we swiggle underline. So Shelo Birshus is the individual that's the source of damage. He bears responsibility. That's what you see here in this most recent point of the Gemara, that Shelo Birshus Chayav. That's Ozdu L'Tamayu. Nofal Lebor V'Hivish Meimov Chayav. The Mishnah taught that if an animal fell into a pit and as a result the water in the pit, the water that's stored in the pit became ruined, the owner of the animal must compensate. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading which reads, Shor Shenofal Lebor V'Hivish Meimov. An ox fell into a pit and ruined the waters. Under the Mivneh heading, a bow tie is featured, and this is the marking that will open up this section of Gemara. And we also have noted in our Gemara there's an Aleph and a Beis bow tie. Shnei Shlovim, these are two stages, Bahavonas Rava, in order to understand what Rava is teaching. So now we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava, Lo Shonu Elo Shehivish Bishas Nefila. The Mishnah teaching that the owner of the animal is responsible is when the damage happened at the time of the animal, at the time that the animal fell into the pit. Avol Liachar Nefila Potter. If damage happened to the water, the ruination of the water was only after the passage of time. The owner of the animal is exempt. My taima. Why is that? Why the distinction between the time of falling? So we say that is as if the animal did the damage and the owner of Momon Hamazik must pay. If the damage to the water was experienced only after time, the owner of the animal is exempt. What's the legal analysis of that? So the Gemara answers, Havishor Bor, where the animal is ruining the water only after the passage of time. You have a situation where there's an animal carcass, it's beginning to decompose, to rot, and that ruins the water. The animal is then viewed as a bore. It's the animal, we'll say, in a passive form, being responsible for the damage. So the animal has a din of a bore, has a legal status of bore. Once again, you see that the literally translating bore as pit would be useless for us. Umayim, the water, kalim, has the legal status or legal identity as kalim. Kalim often is translated as vessels. That's not what water, you wouldn't call water a vessel, but it's a portable entity. So mayim is kalim. V'lomotzinu bor shechayev bo es hakalim. Bor, we mentioned this earlier, is not responsible, doesn't cause culpability when kalim are damaged through bor. Ha'nicha l'shmuel diomar kol takola borhu. This analysis is fine, is understandable according to Shmuel, that says all things that cause stumbling, that cause ruination, are classified as a bor. All, we'll say, passive entities, whether it's a pit, whether it's a bundle lying in a public thoroughfare over which people may trip, those are bor, regardless of whether it's owned or not owned. Elo l'Rav diomar ad mifkar lei. According to Rav, though, a bor doesn't, an item doesn't receive the identity of bor, legal status of bor, until the item is, the item's ownership is renounced. Ma'ikol meimar, how can you explain Rava's exemption for the ruination of the water after passage of time? We've mentioned that the carcass of the animal is ruining the water, but the carcass of the animal is owned by the animal owner, and therefore, according to Rav, it's not hefker. It can't be classified as bor. So why is there an exemption? Why does Rava teach an exemption for la'achar nefila potter? Ela I itmar hochi itmar. So rather, we will restate Rava thusly. Omar Rava lo shonu ela shehivish migufo. The need to compensate that Rava spoke about, or that the Mishnah spoke about, that an animal falling into a pit and ruins the water, is only when the water became ruined through the animal's body. Rashi's example is the animal's body was full of mud, so a muddy ox fell into a pit that was filled with clear drinking water. Now it's ruined. Avol, hivish meirechoi potter. If the ruination of the water was through the reach, reach literally is the smell, the foulness of the water as a result of the carcass of the shore being in there, the owner of the animal is exempt. So why the difference? My taimo. Answer, gromo bi'alma hu. The word gromo has to do with something that's not proactive, but rather something that's causative. We'll explain this a little more when we look into the Rashi. But the reach, the foulness that eventually ruins the water is not something that's inherent in the animal carcass. Only through the course of time, when decomposition sets in, and probably from a microbiological standpoint, one would have to explain that there are microbes that start to, that are attracted to, or their presence becomes known to, or palpable when there is on what to feed. A dead animal, dead meat, is something that attracts, we'll say, these microbes, and their consumption, we'll say, of the flesh releases the foulness. The foul smell is a byproduct of the microbes that were attracted by the animal carcass. But it's not that the animal carcass itself is ruining the water. It's rather grumma. It's causing the microbes to decompose or to consume the meat, which we call decomposition, and that releases the foul smell. Ugroma bialma lo mechayev, and items that are, let's say, causative, as opposed to directly ruining, causative forces or causative entities do not generate the need to make restitution. Hoya oviv o beno lesocho mishalem asa kofer. We saw in the Mishnah that if the father or son of the courtyard owner was in the pit when the animal fell into the pit killed them, so the payment of kofar must be made. So you have the animal owner falling upon father or son of courtyard owner in the pit. Kofar, the kofar is the payment made when an animal kills a person. But not just any animal. The animal would have to be a mu'ad. It's killed, let us say, three times. And after that, kofar must be paid. Whereas in our Mishnah, we see an animal, seems like the first time this happened, and all of a sudden, and already you have to pay kofar. Why do you have to pay kofar? Hotamhu. The Mishnah ostensibly is describing an animal that is docile. It has no track record of this. And a tam, a tam animal, the animal that has no track record of killing, is exempt from paying kofar. The payment of kofar is only stated in the context of mu'ad. So how are we to explain the Mishnah? On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei / mivneh heading. A diamond appears. There are several diamonds as you skim down. You can see there are three pirushim lahasbir tashlum ha-kofar b'shosenu. Three explanations to explain the kofar payment in our Mishnah. Darei ein tam mishalim kofar. The tam level animal having tam status, it doesn't generate the kofar payment. Omar Rav, diamond number one. Bemuad lipol al b'nei odu b'boros haskinon. This is an animal that has a track record, has a proclivity toward falling upon people in pits. So it's a muad, and that's why kofar is paid. The Gemara asks, well, ihachi bar katlehu. Katla means execution. The animal would have been executed from the first fall. An animal that kills a person, regardless of its status, tam or muad, it is executed, is put to death, is killed by the court. So, how can the animal come for a fourth killing? Omar Rav Yosef. The description of this animal is that it has fallen upon people in pits, but it's an animal that wouldn't have been killed for the first fallings. Why? Because the animal had come to a pit seeing vegetation, food, animal food. Rashi says that on the edge of the pit there were grass was growing. It came to eat the grass and fell. Now, it's in falling upon a person under circumstances like that, it was without intent. And an animal that kills without intent is not put to death. Now, it repeated this several times. Once it's done this several times, it's done it three times, so now it's a mu'ad with respect to this behavior. And as such, the kofar payment is in order, is to be made. Shmuel Omar. Shmuel says we're talking about a tam. And the Mishnah that speaks about paying kofar is really half kofar payment. Kofar reflects the value of the person that was killed. If a tam killed the person, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that Shmuel speaks of, you will pay half kofar, like you pay half damages. Shmuel Omar Ha'amoni Rabbi Yossi Aglili Hid Yomar Tam Mishalem Chatzi Kofar. According to that approach, so the kofar in the Mishnah is a chatzi kofar payment. So there's no question anymore of how could the shor be amur for killing and only then pay kofar when it's already been executed. The answer is it hasn't been executed. Even after the first killing of a person, the kofar payment is generated according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Ula Omar. Ula says that the Mishnah is in accordance with the Mishnah is talking about a shor tam, and he follows Shmuel's approach in terms of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. However, according to Ula, we'll talk about a full kofar payment, not half. So Ula Omar, the Mishnah is talking about a tam. That answers the question of, well, wasn't the animal already executed? No, because we're talking about the first time. And the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Diomar ke Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yossi Aglili subscribes to Rabbi Tarfon. Diomar, Karen, Bechotzer, Nizik, Nezek, Sholem, Meshalem. When there is a goring damage in the private domain of the victim, full payment is made, even though it's a short time, which ordinarily for goring would pay half. But since it's in the chotzer hanizik, it's in the victim's own domain, so the aggressor animal owner has to pay full damage. I repeat, even though it's a tam. Hachinami, so too, here, kofar sholem mishalem, full kofar is paid. It's because this is happening in the chotzer hanizik, in the domain of the victim. And as a result, the Mishnah, it said, Mishnah is a kofar, full-fledged kofar, full payment. Bishmali Ula, according to Ula, that said that the animal fell and killed a person and full payment is made. And Ula said, the Mishnah is speaking about the Chotzer and Nizek. Hainu, dekotoni hayo'ove vobeno lesocho. The example of the Mishnah makes perfect sense. The father of the owner of the chotzer, or the son of the owner of the chotzer, were there. It's a private domain, so his father, his son, are there. Hello, Shmuel, but according to Shmuel, that also spoke about a tam killing, and you'll pay half damages. My iria oviv obano filu acher nami. Why speak about father of him, father of chotzer owner or beno, even an outsider as well. Once again, according to Ula, who set up the Mishnah according to Rabbi Tarfon, and kofar sholem, that's because that will happen only in chotzer hanizik. So the example of Ovav and beno are very likely, very relevant, but according to Shmuel, that simply said, the kofar referred to as chatzi kofar, and you weren't limited to the domain of the chotzer anizik. So, why does the Mishnah feature the very specific example of his father or his son? Afilu acher nami, even if it was just any person off the street that happened to be inside that pit at the time the animal fell in. The Gemara says, you're right. The example that was given, urche de milsa katoni, was just giving a common example, a regular case, an expected case, where the father of or the son of the pit owner happened to be there. Vim hichnis birushus bal chotzer chayav. If the animal entered with permission, the Baal Chotzer Chayav, the owner of the courtyard, is obligated to compensate for damages. Let us point out, according to the Tanakhama, responsibility for watching is even when it's unspecified. By the owner of the courtyard simply saying, you can come in, according to the Tanakhama, the first opinion in the Mishnah, you are thereby accepting responsibility to guard from damages. According to Rebbe, acceptance of responsibility of guarding is only when expressed specifically. It's not assumed if it wasn't stated explicitly. Itmar, Rav Omar Hilchaso Ketanakamo, Ushmuel Omar Hilchaso Kerebi. Here you have a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, and how to rule. Does the unspecified guarding, meaning simple granting of permission without specifically accepting guarding responsibility, are you nevertheless responsible for damages? According to Rav, you would be. According to Shmuel, no. Tonu Rabbonon. Here we have a Tanaic source, and the Gemara will point out that there is an inherent contradiction within the source. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei in our margin, the topic heading, HaGemara Mevi'a Braisa. The Gemara will quote a source b'nosei regarding the topic of Kabbalah Shmira, acceptance of guarding responsibility. Umakshe ala braisa digufa kasha. Gemara will raise the question that the braisa is inherently contradictory. Hagemara mara hastiro derech diyukim. The Gemara will point out the contradiction, but only by, let's say, emphasizing the inferences. You will see when drawing inferences from the first part of the source and then the second part of the source, those inferences will be contradictory. As we say here in our note, Mara Astir Derech Diyukim, Mehareshava Seifa. Diyukim, inferences drawn from the Resha and from the Seifa. And as after we draw the inferences, we'll take a look and see how they are contradictory. So let's first read the source. Tonu Rabbonan, Kenois Shorcha Vishomroi. The owner of a piece of property says, you can bring your animal into my property, but you must watch it. Hezik chayav huzak potter. Without specifying who we are referring to, we'll wait for the Gemara to spell those things out. But hezik, if the animal, the animal that was given permission to enter causes damage, so compensation must be made. If the animal is damaged, it's the victim of damage, there is exemption. Another case. Kenois shorcha, bring your animal in. Vani ashmeranu, the owner of the property says, and I'll watch it. Huzak chayav, if the animal experiences damage, if the visiting animal is damaged, chayav, there is responsibility. Hizik poter. If it causes damage, so there is exemption. Ha gufo kashya. By analyzing this source, we will notice it is gufa. It is inherently contradictory. Notice we have a long question. This all of this gemara is needed to highlight the problem. Amris, you say on the one hand, knois shorcha v'shamroi. We're labeling this the resha. This will be in contrast with the gemara presenting four lines later the seifa. So it says in the resha, knois shorcha v'shamroi. Bring your animal in, but you must watch it. Hizik chayav huzak poter. Taimo diarmale shamroi. The reason for the ruling here is because the homeowner said to the animal owner, Shamro, you watch it. The result, the chayav baal hashar, the source spoke about the if the animal causes damage, so there is culpability on whom? The owner of the animal. He was told to watch it. So if the animal causes damage, that's hizik, it said, chayav upoter baal hachotzer. The source also spoke about if the invited animal is itself damaged, there's exemption. The exemption is upon the homeowner. He does not have to compensate for any loss suffered, any depreciation in the animal that entered. As you can see, the homeowner said, you watch your animal. Now, we can infer from this, if there was no expressly stated instruction to watch it. Stamo means just come in. You can come in. So now we would infer chayov baal chotzer. If the animal does damage, then in contrast with the case where shomro was stated explicitly, here it wasn't stated. Now the baal chotzer becomes chayov. Upoter baal hashor. If the chayav means if the entering animal proactively damaged someone else, something else, baal hachotzer is chayav, and poter baal hashor, the owner of the animal is exempt. De bestamo mekabel ole netirusa. Stamo refers to unexpressed words of guarding. Of acceptance of guarding. Stamo is the case of a property owner giving permission to come in. No express statement regarding guarding. So come in, stated by the homeowner, according to the inference from the resha, means mekabel alein etirusa, that homeowner, he is accepting upon himself guarding, watching. The only time that the animal owner is going to be guilty in the event that the animal causes damage is when he was told specifically to watch the animal, but without any specific instructions regarding guarding, the balabayas is chayav. He is mekabel olei netirusa, accepts upon himself watching. Emo seifa. Well, we continue with the very same source. Now the latter part. Kenoish Sharcha Vani Eshmerenu. Balabaya says, bring your animal in and I will watch it. Huzak Chayav. If anything happens to the invited animal by way of it getting damaged, Chayav. There's compensation must be made. Hizik Potter. And now we do the same thing we did above. Taima Diomar Le Vani Eshmerenu. Only because the homeowner said, I will watch it. Who the mechayev baal chotzer? The owner of the chotzer will be chayev if this animal does damage to someone else. Upoter baal hashor. And the poter stated in the source is a reference to the owner of the animal will be poter if it causes damage to others. Why is the animal owner poter? Because the homeowner said, "I will watch it." naturally, the huzak chayav, if the animal itself, the invited animal, is itself damaged, so the chayav will be the bala chotzer, because he said, I will watch it, I'll make sure nothing goes wrong. Well, what can we infer from this? Oh, stama. Imagine a case where there would be no expressed acceptance of watching on the part of the homeowner. The owner of the animal would then bear responsibility, and the homeowner would be exempt. The bestama, without expressed intention of accepting shmira, lo mekabel olei netirusa, he does not accept upon himself guarding responsibility. Oh, so now with stam, unexpressed watching intentions, there is no acceptance of watching a responsibility on homeowner. I saw in the Rebbe, that approach is like Rebbe's. The Amar Ad Shikabel Olei Bala Bayas Netirusa. That until he expressly accepts upon himself Netirusa guarding, he's not responsible. Now structurally, what do you see? Reisha Rabbanan. V'seifa Rebbe, should we say that the Reisha... Just to go back a few lines in the Gemara where the we'll say the first of the house markings appeared. So we made our inference over there, and then you noticed there was a squiggle underline two lines after the beginning of line, Debestama Mekabel, the triangle that you see there. Debestama Mekabel, Olei Netirusa. That was what you would infer from the Reisha. What do you infer from the Seifa? We just read it. Notice the inverted triangle. Preceded by the Bestama, the Swigalan Bestama, Lo Mekabel Olei Netirusa. Should we therefore say that the Reisha is in accordance with the Rabbanon and the Seifa of the same Tanaic source, the same brief Tanaic source without any names in it, is authored by Rebbe? In other words, you have a split authorship of this short source? Omar Rebbe Lozer Tavra Mi Shishonazu Lo Shonazu. The trapezoid marking is featured on the side of the Gemara. These are Shalosh Chuvos Lahazbi Abraisa. Three answers, three approaches how to explain the source. Rebbe Lozer says that the source, in fact, has dual authorship. The Reisha is authored by the Rabbanan, and the Seifa is authored by Rebbe. Rava Omar Kula Rabbanan Hi. The entire source is really in accordance with the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said that Bestama, you're not Mekabel, that Bestama, you are Mekabel Shmira. The Bestama, you're Mekabel Shmira, is what we saw in the Reisha. So the Rava says the whole source is the Rabbanan. Aidi Denosiv Reisha Shamro. Since the Reisha had a purpose in teaching what it did, it said where the homeowner instructed the animal owner to watch his own animal, and what are the laws, and the laws that result from that, that which is taught in the Reisha. So, Tana Seifa v'ani eshmerenu. The Seifa gave a contrasting case where the homeowner says, and I will watch it. But we have to point out, the Seifa was not taught with inference intention, but rather, we said that the homeowner will be responsible when he says so explicitly, but even where he doesn't say so explicitly, by simply giving permission to enter, he, the homeowner, bears responsibilities. Mekabel Netirusa. So that when you learn the Seifa, you are not learning it with any, we'll say, inference intent. The Reisha, so there you say, as Rava said, the whole source is in accordance with the Rabbanon, so the Reisha is very specific, is meduyok. Means only when the homeowner says to the animal owner, you watch it, will the animal owner continue to bear responsibility. However, if the homeowner simply says, come in, then the animal owner no longer bears responsibility. The responsibility of guarding falls upon the homeowner, because bestamo mekabel aleinu tirusa. So that's Rava's approach. The third approach, Rav Papa Amar, kula Rebbe he. The entire source is in accordance with Rebbe, that there is acceptance on the part of the homeowner only when he says so explicitly. And that's what you saw in the Seifa. The Seifa then is meduyak, is precise, that only then will we say that the animal owner will be exempt if the animal causes damage, because the homeowner formally and explicitly accepted upon himself guarding responsibility. Now, we have to explain then what's going on in the Reisha. So Rav Papa says that the entire source is authored by Rebbe. The Savar law, Rebbe Tarfon, Rebbe holds like Rebbe Tarfon, Yomar, Karen Bechotzer HaNizik, Nezek Shalem Mishalem, that when the damage of Karen takes place in the private domain of the victim, full payment will be made, even if it's a short tam, which ordinarily would pay for Karen Chatzi Nezek, but since it's in the Chotzer HaNizik, Rebbe Tarfon says full payment is made. Hilkach. And now, what the Gemara does in the next few lines is it develops Rav Papa's approach that the source above is in accordance with Rebbe, who subscribes to Rebbe Tarfon, and how to understand the Reisha and the Seifa. Hilkach, therefore, Omar le Shomroi, when the in the Reisha case, where the homeowner said to the animal owner, you watch your own animal. So, you know, you can come into my property, but you've got to watch your animal. Lo makni le mokom b'chotzer. The homeowner is not granting, we'll say, possession or ownership of a spot within the chotzer to the owner of the animal. V'havio le keren b'chotzer anizik. Damage that that animal causes is considered Karen in the domain of the victim. The victim, meaning the homeowner, he's the sole owner of the property. The Karen b'chotzer nizik mishalim nezik shalem. Karen, that the damage of Karen in a private domain, the private domain of the victim, pays full damages. Who pays? The owner of the animal will pay full damages. Lo Omar le Shomroi, man says to the animal owner, come in, and he doesn't say, and you watch it. Aknuye akni le mokum b'chotzer. He's saying, not only can you come into the chotzer, you're not a trespasser, you're an invited guest, and not only that, but you also have a part of the chotzer. You're considered an owner, a partner in this chotzer. V'avil l'chotzer ha-shutfin. And now it's classified as a jointly owned chotzer. The Karen b'chotzer ha-shutfin eino mishale melo chatzi nezek. Where Karen damages in a chotzer ha-shutfin, only half damages are paid. Highly recommended is to look right now at Rashi. And let's do that. Kula Rebbe hi. V'seifa davka. By saying that the source is in accordance with Rebbe, the Seifa that spoke about the homeowner bearing responsibility, that's only when he says so explicitly. So that the Seifa is precise. The Seifa is very deliberate and specific. That's what davka means. That Rashi Seifa Davka. And in the absence of the homeowner saying, I will watch your animal, homeowner bears no responsibility. V'resha lo teduk mina. When reading the resha, don't make the inference, ha stama huzak chayav, that without any formal statement of guarding, simply the stam cases, you can come in, that huzak chayav, if the visiting animal is damaged, that the homeowner would bear responsibility. That's not so. Devadai stam onami, it's clear that in the stam case as well, hizik chayav, if the animal causes damage, the animal owner is chayav, huzak poter, and if the animal, the visiting animal, is damaged, the homeowner is exempt. He didn't formally accept guarding responsibility. V'hai dinokat v'shomroi. So why did the Reisha speak about specific instructions to the visitor? You watch your own animal. If it's not taught for inference purposes, so why bother adding that point? The answer is lechiyuve nezek sholein ko'amar. The instruction on the part of the homeowner to the visitor, you watch your own animal, will impose a full damage requirement upon the owner of the animal, im huzak shoro shabal chotzer. If the homeowner's animal is damaged through the visiting animal, the owner of the visiting animal will have to pay full damages. Hostamo chatzinezek. If, however, the animal entered with permission, but no specific instruction to animal owner was stated, you watch your own animal, all that was told to him, come in, and then visiting animal damages homeowner animal, only half damages would be paid. At that point, it's not considered chotzer hanizik anymore. The Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah itself, a brief topic heading, Demei Vlogos. This is money paid for damage that results in a woman miscarrying. When is that payment made? When is it not paid? Now the Mishnah. Shor shoy miskavin lechaver v'hikos isha. An animal that was intent on imposing injury on another animal, and instead it ended up impacting a woman, v'yotzi lodel, and she miscarried. Poter migmei vlodos. The animal owner is exempt from compensating for the miscarriage. But Rashi points out an additional halachic detail, and that is, this exemption is not limited to the case where the animal was aiming for another animal. But even if the animal was aiming for the woman herself, there is exemption from Demei Vlodos. That's based on Exeris Akosuv that was taught on Daf Mem Beis. Let's continue in the Mishnah. The Odom, by the way, the information we just shared is something the Gemara itself will reveal, so we jumped the gun a little bit by detailing what we did. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Adam shoy miskavin lechavero. Two men are in a physical altercation, and one is aiming to hit his friend. V'hikos isha, inadvertently he impacted a woman. V'yotzu yilodeo, and she miscarried. Mishalem demei vlodos. Payment must be made. Ketzad mishalem demei vlodos. How do we calculate the value of the miscarriage? Shomin eso isha, kamo hi yofa ad shelo yoda, v'kamo hi yofa mishi yoda. Here we're going to translate, and the translation is that we evaluate the value of the woman before she gave birth, and how much she is worth after she gave birth. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. We continue at the top of the Mem Tes. He reacts and says, Im Kain, Misho Isho Yoledes Mishabachas. Rashi immediately says, Meforish B'Gemara. This will be explained by the Gemara. But on the translation level, he's saying that, well, according to your method of evaluation, the woman is worth more actually after she gives birth. Ella Shaman, and we're looking for imposing a payment obligation on the aggressor individual who caused this woman's miscarriage. Ella Shaman esha vlodois kama hein yofin v'noisein labal. We evaluate the value of the children, of the birth, and that's given to the husband. V'imein lo baal, no sein liorshav. If there is no husband, it's given to his heirs. Hoiso shivcha v'nishtachra ogyuris poter. If the woman who was impacted and miscarried was a heathen bondmaid that was set free, or a woman who converted to Judaism, there are no heirs in this case. So then, if there are no heirs, what happens to the money that should have been paid? The aggressor is exempt from paying. The Rashi adds a little detail here. Second line from the top, Hoise Shifcha v'nishtachra, Klomar. Klomar inevitably means, don't explain the Gemara based on the simple translation, but add a little more. What is meant here? Hoise Mishukhara Sogiris. The Mishnah describes a woman who was a heathen bondmaid set free or a convert to Judaism. Nesua Lager O Le'evin Mishukhara. The woman, how did she become impregnated? She had, let us put it this way, she was a pregnant woman that had been married to a convert. The Gioras, the woman converting to Judaism, had married a man who himself was a convert. The heathen bondmaid that was set free had been married to an Eved Meshuchar, a slave that was set free. V'ein lo baal. The woman who was just whose miscarriage took place doesn't have a husband. Why? Shemes, he died. So we have this heathen bondmaid who was set free or a convert. There's no husband to pay the Dmei Vlados. So the offender, Potter, he's exempt from paying. A person who takes possession of the property of a convert who dies, shortly after his conversion, he died. Meaning he didn't have any children as a Jew. A person who converts to Judaism, legally speaking, is like a newborn child. He has no connection in legal terms to his past, to any past family. And as such, the property of a ger shemes that has no heirs is considered hefker. And in our case, we have money that was owed to that individual, but there's no one to pay. So zocha v'zeh koydem liskos v'mashi biyado. The offender is able to become the possessor of it because it's already in his possession. It's money that he would have had to pay. The receiver of the money is not around, so he remains the possessor of that which is already in his possession. Let's turn back to the Gemara now. The Mishnah spoke about an exemption when an animal caused the miscarriage. Exemption for paying Dmei Vlados. Taimo de Miskavin Lechavero. The Mishnah seems to be saying that the reason the animal owner is exempt is because the animal was aiming to injure a fellow animal. And it just happened without intent that a woman was impacted and hence miscarried. Ho, miskavin lisha. You would infer, though, from the Mishnah that if the animal's intent was to attack the woman, Mishalim Dmei Vlados, the animal owner would have to pay Dmei Vlados. Well, If you're going to say that, then then we'll have to say that our Mishnah is a refutation of Ravada's teaching. Ravada was an Amora. He is saying something apparently that's against this Mishnah. The Yomer Ravada Barava, what did he say? Shvorim shiniskavnu liishapturim idmei vlados. Animals that willfully, intentionally gore a woman, and that causes her to miscarry, the owner of those aggressive animals are exempt from paying dmei vlados. But we're inferring from our mission that if the animal had intent for the woman, the animal owner would have to, would have to pay the dmei vlados, the compensation fee for the miscarriage. So is our Mishnah then a refutation of Rav Ado? Omar loch Rav Ado Maravo, Rav Ado will answer, Huadin, Tafiz Kavli Shonami Pturim Minei Vlodos. The truth is, it likewise, even if the animal was aiming for the woman, there will be an exemption on the animal owner part of compensating for the Vlodos. V'hadi Kotoni Shor Shoy Miskaving L'Chavero, the Mishnah that featured that case, animal aiming for a fellow animal, why did it speak about animal aiming l'chaveiro? Aydi d'gbola misna seifa, since the Mishnah wanted to teach in the seifa, odom shohoya miskavein l'chaveiro, the people altercation, there the man was aiming for his friend, and he happened to cause miscarriage of the woman. Dehochi ksiv kra, that is the, that's what the, that's the, we'll say, the story that the Torah speaks of. That's the case that the Torah is mechayev for, where two men are fighting, and one is aiming for his, for the other man, and he happens to cause a miscarriage to a woman. So that's, the Mishnah is simply reflecting the story told in the Torah. Kotoni Reisha Nami Shor Shahoya Miskavin L'Chavero. The Reisha also spoke in those terms, used that example of L'Chavero. But, just to repeat the main point, but not that the Reisha is teaching a law from which we are supposed to draw an inference. Omar Rav Popo, Shor Shenogach Es Hashivcha. An animal gored a heathen bondmaid. V'yotzu Yolodeh, the heathen bondmaid is owned by a Jew, and she now miscarried as a result of the impacting of this animal. Mishalim Dmei Vlados. The Dmei Vlados is to be paid. Now, did we not just say before that in Rav Ado Bar Abba's name that animals that, that cause miscarriage do not generate the Dmei Vlados payment? What therefore is Rav Popa teaching here? My taimo, why is there a payment obligation here? Answer, chamrusa mabrusa ba'alma hu da'azik. There's a certain imagery that's used here. We're dealing with a heathen bondmaid. A heathen bondmaid, in technical Jewish law, with regard to, we'll say, aspects of monetary compensation, is considered an article owned by the owner. So here I have a case of an article owned. Hamrasa literally is a donkey. A pregnant donkey was injured. So just imagine an ox comes and gores someone's pregnant donkey, causing the damage of losing the unborn donkey, causing it to miscarry. That's a straightforward case of tort law where property damage was experienced. Animals that cause property damage, the owners of such aggressive animals must compensate. The Omar Kra, the Gemara, cites a posuk which shows us how heathen bondmaids or servants are considered like, again, in legal terms, it should not sound demeaning. I know that in the age that this recording is being made, there's a great deal of talk of being politically correct, etc., and so forth. So we'll simply, by way of Mesiris Moido say that I should say, by way of disclaimer, we should simply say that we're speaking about a specific legal categories, that a heathen bondmaid is considered owned property. And we see in the pasuk says Shvu lochem po im hachamor. If you go back to the biblical account of Avram Avinu and the Akedas Yitzchak, present in that account was Avram Avinu's heathen slave. And in the pasuk says, sit here with the donkey. It's a reference to sit here with the slave, and the reference to the donkey is Am Hadome Lechamor. The congregation, the population strata of those that are slaves are paralleled to donkeys. Again, not in a demeaning fashion, but in the sense that it's viewed as property. So, in contrast with an animal that causes a regular Jewish woman to miscarry, the regular Jewish woman is not considered a piece of property. So there, the pasuk says that animals are exempt from compensating for miscarriages done to Jewish women. However, that exemption does not extend to miscarriages caused by animals of heathen bondmaids. And that's derived from the pasuk. Hence, Rav Papa's ruling is fine. It's not. It doesn't contradict anything that was said earlier. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.